Marty in the Morning on RTE Lyric FM with Spry Finance. Keep living the life you love.
I have Alia Cornish Moore with me this morning. And you think, is that the woman who plays the viola? You know you'd be right. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks
nice
for having
me. Nice
to
meet you in the flesh.
Likewise.
We had Zoomed before.
Yes.
But we are now, well, Zoomed. We had down the line, whatever all that was. Firstly, good morning and welcome. Where have you travelled from to be with us this morning?
I'm actually in Dublin, so I've come on my bike on a beautiful morning.
Did you
morning.
Come on the bike? I have a colleague who cycles the bike every morning. Do you find it safe and good? What's good for you, you see?
Well, a bit of risk early in the morning does set you up for the day. Bit of adrenaline.
Well, that's true. And waving of fists at haughty motus. But how far away are you from here, for example?
I'm in the docks, so it's really not
Well, that's, okay, that's not
lovely.
So bad at all. No, that's not, and I believe it's beautiful outside.
It's gorgeous outside
here in the
today.
Lyric bunker, we see nothing. We have no vision at all. We are left here. They send food and drink, and they just leave us here to do what we can. Now, I want to explain something. You are CEO of the Irish Baroque Orchestra.
Guilty as charged.
Guilty as charged. Now, I have to check out something else. I know you play the viola and baroque viola, which is a different
Indeed.
Thing altogether.
Yes, gut strings.
Gut strings.
Different bow, no scaffolding, so no chin rest, no shoulder rest, none of that jazz.
That's just hard work.
Well, I mean, you say that, it is still the viola at the end of the day.
Well,
so.
I suppose, yeah. But it's a different kettle of fish altogether, it really
it
is.
It is indeed, it's a different sound, and I think that's what's so attractive, well, to me anyway, about period instruments groups, so historical instruments.
Sure.
It's a completely different sound world and a different colour. So there's a feeling of time travel that you get with it, that this
that's
is how
sure.
we think it sounded 300 years ago.
It's funny, we had our colleague Vlad in yesterday with his early music instruments.
Yes.
Again, the sound is so different.
Yes.
And the texture, the feel of the thing is just completely different to anything contemporary. It's amazing.
Yes.
It's different. So was it very difficult to learn it then when you were, I presume you were you a small person, a little person when you started?
Well, I started on modern viola, as we call it,
yes,
in the historical
did.
Performance world.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until I was a student, actually, that I discovered the Baroque. And there was something about the way that these groups make music that really spoke to me. It feels like chamber music, but
yes.
in an orchestra.
Right.
And I was never good at sitting down and doing what I was told in a symphony orchestra. So
I'm not
for
good
me,
at that either.
Well, maybe you're a period instrument player, Martin.
Maybe.
We'll have to recruit
in my
you.
Gut somewhere. But it's nice to be a little rebellious. It's never any harm.
Indeed.
Or, you know. However, we better explain why you're here, because St. Matthew's Passion, it's on tomorrow.
We start tomorrow in Kilkenny, partnering with Music in Kilkenny in St. Canice's Cathedral. We have a performance on Friday at St. Patrick's, and then Saturday we're at Galway Cathedral with Music for Galway.
How many people are we talking about when it comes to the Irish Baroque Orchestra? How many in there?
For this, we have about 35 musicians.
That's
so
a large,
for us, that's large.
Yeah.
We're usually much smaller, and then we have 10 singers on
stage. And you're moving quite lightly there between the three cities. That's quite an undertaking.
It is. It's good for us. So it's the first time that we're performing this piece, and it will be an annual event from this year.
Good for you.
So there are elements of it that are going to be educational for us in the next few days.
Yeah, well,
so it's a voyage of discovery.
Now, I do know you're going to London, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But
sure.
The St. Matthew Passion, from what I've read about it, it was, like, initially, there were complaints about it, weren't there? Like, it wasn't exactly... Now, you should explain, it was the 1700s or whatever it was.
Yeah, 1727.
There you go.
First performed.
So where was it first performed?
In the Thomaskirche in Leipzig.
So
Bach was the music master there.
And as happens so often, we find this with operas, like, the first time they're performed, there's people whinging about it.
Yeah.
You didn't do this, so why is that? But there were complaints about this as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, there were. It was atypical in the sense that the depth and the breadth of it was something that hadn't really been encountered before. This piece broke the mold, really. So, and in fact, when it was first performed, it would have been chaos in the church, because this was an audience that wasn't accustomed to sitting down for performances in the sense that we use that word now.
Sure.
There would have been all sorts of talking in the congregation. There would have been dogs running around. We know that the church employed wardens to walk around and try and keep the dogs under control. So it
really?
Would have been complete chaos. That's an element of the performance that we're not recreating over the next few nights.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's 300 years old.
Yes.
So trying to imagine the world then.
Yes.
Now the noise is people going out for pints of beer.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I'm sure there was some of that too.
Yeah, there probably was, yeah.
But it's an extraordinary piece to have endured. I think this piece is a miracle. There is no other way of putting it. And I think in an age of relentless emails and notifications and depressing news, there's a moment of respite with this piece and contemplation and a chance to connect with something bigger than all of us. Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of us could do with at the moment. It's sure. good for the soul.
Now, we do have a piece... that we can play. Now, the only thing we would say to people is the piece that we have is very long. So we give people just a little flavour of this. It's Anne-Sophie. And what do we play? A little piece of this?
Lovely.
It's just to give people a little sense of it. We're talking about Johann Sebastian Bach, by the way, just in case anybody's wondering. Birthday boy. Birthday boy.
Yes, birthday yesterday.
Boy. We celebrated yesterday. We did. we got a card, but we'd no address. But still, there we are. Let's have a listen. That's music from Anne-Sophie von Otter from Johann Sebastian Bach. We're talking about St. Matthew Passion, which is on, and I'm reminding you again, tomorrow at St. Canice's Cathedral in Kilkenny, on Friday, St. Patrick's,
yes,
in Dublin, and on Saturday in Galway Cathedral. And I've Alia Cornish Moore with me this morning. Incidentally, You were also a trumpet player, aren't you?
Well, that's probably stretching the term.
No, we discovered, Ian went on a discovery, voyage of discovery, and discovered that you played the trumpet as well. Is this a secret passion as opposed to a Matthew passion? Is it a different passion that you have?
I love the segue. I did my grade one in lockdown for Music Network as part of their grade one-a-thon.
Wow.
With significant apologies to my neighbours who were very generous about the whole experience. I did pass, which was quite extraordinary. My rhythm was excellent.
But rhythm was excellent, pretty about the chords. But yes, the fact remains, it's another, literally, string to your bow. It's nice, another thing that you do.
I don't know if I could claim it as an accomplishment, but it was good fun.
No. Now, listen, you mentioned about St. Matthew's Passion, and it is interesting, isn't it, the fact that there would be complaints that people would have various issues with something like that as well. But the whole idea at all of anything that, I suppose, even back then and still now, there's always controversy when you tackle anything that is even touching on religion. That there's always going to be that. So yes, it was quite brave back to go and do this. And to,
absolutely. I think music has a history of provoking riots in some cases. Thinking of the Rite of Spring, for example, in 1913, and there being absolute bedlam to the extent that the dancers couldn't hear the orchestra and the whole thing fell into chaos. Yeah. So at least it wasn't quite like that, I believe, for the Matthew Passion.
Yeah.
But it's certainly, it's a piece that provokes a response, certainly.
Yeah, and has done for hundreds of years. Now, the people that you have with you on stage, just to give us a sense of who they are, Peter Whelan, of course.
He's back.
Well, he's a Whelan. He's like myself. We keep bouncing back. We never disappear.
He's back in Ireland.
He is, for sure, which is wonderful. He's the director. But your singers as well, that we should give a mention to.
We have an outstanding group of singers with us for this. We're working with Sestina. Their musical director is Mark Chambers. And it's just a stunning collection of singers that we have on stage. It's a real privilege to hear them. We have Hilary Cronin. We have Beth Taylor. We have James Way, actually, evangelising, who is wonderful.
Now, explain to those who don't know what that actually
means. What the role
means
of the evangelist is. Yes, so the evangelist really is our guide through the story.
Right.
So he's our narrator. So he's presenting the facts to us as we move through the story. And then the role of the chorus really is the response. So they change from at times being sympathetic bystanders. At times they're the council judging that Jesus deserves to die. And at times they're obeying mob screaming for him to be crucified. So the chorus puts these different lenses on the story, and they are the human response. And Jesus himself is actually, his part is not significant, surprisingly. You think about the crucifixion, you think he's the main guy, surely. But he's benign, he's dignified. And this is one of the most touching things that it gets me every time. Bach gives him a halo of sound. Every time he sings, the strings just hold chords in the background around him, this benevolent, kind cushion. It's so beautiful, and I love that detail.
Isn't that something? You are doing something else, and I don't want to take away from the Matthew Passion, obviously, but you're going to London to do, you're going to be at the Wigmore Hall.
We are.
But it's not St. Matthew. It's different.
No. We are going to the Wigmore Hall on April the 2nd, making our debut there with Peter Whelan, with the 1742 Dublin version of Handel's Messiah. So we're fully reclaiming it as an Irish work, and we're taking it to London.
And is it significantly different?
Some of the arias are, yes. So it's there are rhythm changes and just little subtle differences. So after the Dublin version, Handel did refine and change things, like so many composers reiterating as they went along. The same is true, actually, of Bach with the Matthew, that kept evolving through his lifetime.
Yes.
So the idea is that we're presenting the original version, the way we believe it would have been performed.
That's
in 1742. It is. It's time travel.
Yeah, it is. And is it only, as the fellow said, is it only one night? Is it just one?
It is. It's just the one. It's selling very well. So I should say, if anyone wants to go, I would advise you to book ASAP.
You'll have to bring it back to Dublin, though.
I know, we will. We're talking about it. We also need to commit it to disc, I think. So that's a future project for the idea.
You see, that's very important as well. I know now people stream, I know all that.
Mm.
But there's nothing like the physicality of a thing that says, this is what we have, this is who we are.
Yeah.
Because that lives on. And it reminds people as well to play you on the radio, for God's sake. No, but that's very important, because otherwise these things can disappear. Now, Marta, I see you have Alia Cunchmore on the programme today. she's great. Her contribution to the Irish Baroque Orchestra working together with Peter Whelan has been amazing. Also, their orchestral manager, Darren Kelly, ain't half bad either. So I just thought, pass it on.
She's wonderful.
The other thing, how lucky to have a mentor such as Ali from the proud mother, Sharon Kelly, and Stephen Kelly. Thank you for the support.
Goodness me. That's very generous.
You're being followed around now. You'll have to give them a trumpet blast as soon as you get an opportunity. We're talking about J.S. Bach, and just for the moment, while we're here, why not? Now, I'm playing that. We're chatting away here with Alia Cornish-Moore, who is CEO of the Irish Baroque Orchestra. That is the Irish Baroque Orchestra.
It okay? is.
And that is J.S. Bach's Erinna G. String, J.S. Bach, who we're talking about in terms of the St. Matthew Passion. It's all linking in its own way. But we're just trying to make a point. Claire Duff, the director of that. But as I was introducing that, you said to me, there is a story that goes with that. That's live, by the way, at the National Concert Hall.
Yes.
And it sounds like studio quality.
Good.
And the story is?
The story is that that piece wasn't actually rehearsed. That the programme we were meant to play that night at the NCH, it was last June, was a programme with Rachel Podger entitled Bach's Doubles and Triples, so a celebration of his concerti for two and three instruments. And Rachel was sadly indisposed less than an hour before the performance was due to start. And there was a question of what do we do? You know, the audience was flooding into the NCH at that point. We had sold well. What do we do? Can we do anything? We reworked the programme with about 45 minutes to go. A lot of panicky printing going on in our office on the first floor of the National Concert Hall building. And about 5 minutes before the orchestra went on, I walked past one of the dressing rooms and they were all just stood listening to a piece being played out of somebody's phone, following the music visually, so no playing, no rehearsal, just internalising all of it. And they went out and performed a programme that they hadn't rehearsed and it was astonishing. They brought the house down. I was so proud of them.
That is just magnificent.
They are wonderful.
Is that real? Because that's against the odds to be able to do it at that level. And like I said, it's not even going into a recording studio where at least you go, oh, look, we made a mess of this one, lads, we have to start again.
Sure.
It's a live audience in a theatre.
Absolutely. In fact, we did it at such short notice that I completely forgot to tell the lyric producer who was up in the rafters taking the whole thing that the programme had changed completely. And I ran up about 20 minutes into the gig and said, I'm so sorry, you're not expecting any of this music, are you?
And you, the CEO, my golly. Now, let's take the last few seconds of this so now we can check it for accuracy. Here it is. It's perfect. It's perfect. Perfection. That's just perfection, the Irish Baroque Orchestra. That's just stunning. Well done.